then last year, which become pretty popular in Taiwan. The daily average trading volume for this weekly index option is around 200,000 contracts per day last year. It has become the most heavily traded weekly options in the whole world. Regarding to the international cooperation, we have signed 21 MOUs with foreign exchange to cooperate with different projects ranging from information exchange to product cooperation. As Roland just mentioned, one of the most important projects going on is the cooperation with Eurex, which we call Eurex TFX Link. On May 15th, Eurex will launch a one-day futures contract with the underlying being our index futures and the index options. This project practically extends the trading hours for our local investors. We believe this product can expand the investment opportunity for local investors to increase the market liquidity and eventually lead to a better market efficiency. That's it. Thanks.
Mike? Salam Pagi, good morning everyone. I'm from the Singapore Exchange, and the exchange in Singapore, very much like the one in Thailand or in Germany or in Taiwan, is an integrated exchange. So the body of law that governs our exchange is the Securities and Futures Act, and therefore we have a securities hub and a derivatives hub, and my job is to look after the derivatives hub. And in origin, it's probably worth reflecting a little about how our derivatives exchange came into being, because the story of that exchange is somewhat different than most other exchanges. 30 years ago, it was started off as Cymex, and the idea then was to... There was a race at that time to try and internationalize the usage of the US dollar, because the US dollar was still capital controlled in the US. And at that point in time, there was a big question whether US dollars outside of the US should be traded in London or should it be traded in the US. And London actually seemed a very natural place to be trading US dollars. All the banks were there, all the people with assets were there. That's why today, even the interest rates for US dollars are still set in London. That's why it's LIBOR. So at that point in time, the folks in the Chicago Mercantile Exchange decided that the only way to succeed in getting US dollar interest rates trading in the US was to have a sort of 24-hour cycle of trading. And that's when Cymex in Singapore started, with a link between the CME and with Cymex, as it then was, to offer 24-hour trading and clearing. So the importance of that point is that our business in Singapore has never really been about retail usage or futures. It's always been about offshore institutional usage in offshore capital markets, which is always the first step towards internationalizing capital markets. So since that point in time, 30 years ago, there's a number of other products which have led to the same conclusion of internationalizing markets. Firstly, the Nikkei 225, which was started in Singapore in 86, and then a couple of years later started in Osaka, and obviously with the Republic of China, we worked together to do the Taiwan index countries index contracts. With the People's Republic of China, we also worked together to do the Asia contract. So that history of doing offshore markets in order to internationalize is quite deeply embedded in our structure, and it leads to a handful of implications. One, that the body of law that we have to recognize isn't really about Singaporean law. We have, from day one, had to abide by CFTC rules. As of today, I have four different regulators I have to cut out to. I have to cut out the CFTC, my own regulator, soon it will be the European regulators, the Hong Kong regulators we just signed up to. So a lot of the business model of what we do is to make sure that our body of law is internationally compatible in order to facilitate international trade. And that's where the story of the last 2 years has been very challenging but also very interesting. Because it's not so much an exchange story from our point of view, it is about what is the move towards harmonization of financial market infrastructures. Right? An exchange is only a small part of the national market infrastructure. So what Singapore represents really is a trading hub, not a domestic market. The products that we've grown into have really started off in financials. Some 5-6 years ago, we moved into commodities. So today we have a small but growing commodities business, again, around Asian commodities to do with iron ore and freight and such like things. And heading forward, it is probably expected that that pattern of how to service offshore international capital markets will continue.
Excellent, thank you, Michael. And Sherman, you're on again. What's in get more?
I think this morning I've already introduced our address, but maybe some of the participants curious about who is on the DFX, right? Mm-hmm. So basically we are we have 29 mutual shareholders, 11 from the palm oil industry, and then 8 coffee exporters and 8 from the financial service companies. And also we have the 2 state-owned companies as our shareholders, like PTBN and Danareksa. Danareksa is one of the leader shareholders company in Indonesia. Then we also provide the facilities for its members to trade futures exchange in our exchange, and then through the efficient interaction for supply and demand via electronic trading system we have. And now we also try to develop the new system of the online trading system for the community, and then hopefully it will be done very soon at the beginning of next month. And I hope it will can encourage our member to do more commodity transactions in our exchange. And then in our exchange, the most liquid product is gold. Yeah, we have gold both physically and futures. Physically means that we trade the physical of gold, but in a very small quantity, you know, because we want to grab the low base income market to invest gold physically through our exchange. Okay, this is the additional information from our exchange. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherman. I guess, so just moving along, in terms of the region, what's going on out here, there's a lot going on relative to the local exchanges, as well as a lot of news about established non-Asian exchanges and the counterparts beginning to focus on Asia. And I just sort of put together a little bit of a highlight of what the challenges are in just the last couple of months. I mean, just to list a few of the ICE's acquisition of SMX in terms of Singapore, Eurex, Deutsche Börse, EEX, and you've got a lot of news as you mentioned, Roland, acquisition of ClearTrade, Deutsche Börse, talking about building a CCP now in Asia. ASX and CME have now announced their talks about cooperability, which is sort of a new term, not interoperability, cooperability, and that I think that's sort of a knee-jerk reaction to the interests of Eurex and ICE and SGX and the other regional exchanges sort of planting their own flags. Indonesia, we've heard about KOSTRA and the board regulations in terms of the exchange impact and what are the opportunities there. SGX's role in the region with DCO recognition, which was an important first step for Asia. On the back of that, you've got the challenges of the regulations, Dodd-Frank, AMIR out of Europe, Basel III, the new collateral rules, FATCA out of the U.S. in terms of withholding regulations, FCA out of U.K., EU, and ESMA, which everybody has to adhere to out here in Asia. You all have to address it accordingly at some point in time. And then a shift in regard to the OTC benchmark settlement processes, LIBOR, CIBOR, Platts, FX, and the global gold fixing. All challenges. I see them as opportunities for Asia. You guys are, and Eurex in terms of what your commitment is now to Asia. I mean, I think it's all important. It's important in terms of what are the opportunities. What are the opportunities being presented around the regulations? And I want to hear from you guys, how is your home regulators are addressing them, as well as how is Asia in a broad stroke going to defend their home field advantage? You're in the uptick relative to the growth of the market opportunities. Sarah, you mentioned earlier that You had a little bit of a setback, but I think you had some political challenges relative to Thailand. So we take away those political challenges, which will pass. So let's start with you.
Everybody know that I have the political uncertainty in Bangkok, and I think most of them coming from the rice issue also. Because of the Thai market is the most the top exporter of the rice products in the world. You know, eat it all. We still have left to export. We might not be the largest producer, but we are the largest exporters. But that one is all the politics issues. But for Thai market, that I mentioned that last year, the both the stock market and the food market has been growing very well because of all the prospect of the big tech company and the derivative has been very good. But this year, for the first 2 months, we see that a slightly dropping of the trading volume in both the cash market and derivative market, but it still be hold at a very good level. But on some other things that I think all the regulator has been moving is Thai market is most of the time we are quite domestic players, and we have a regulation regarding the capital control. So every contract has to, every product has to be traded in the local Thai currencies. The regulator allow us to do the foreign currencies. But starting from the last year, we see that regulation has been relaxed, and they are promoting the offshore investment. This is because of the Thai baht currency has been getting very strong. We are, I think, one of the top lists of keeping a lot of international reserve. Even we are small countries, but we have a huge international reserve. That's why our currency is getting stronger. And the central bank is going to allow the Thai people to invest in offshore. This one, I think, is created another environment that Thai people, the investors themselves are getting more aware of the international environment and all the international flavors that they are looking for the investment in the offshore. So the participants in the Thai markets, like all the brokers and the bank and the financial institutions, are starting to offer the foreign products to the Thai investor. This is, I think, is a challenge for the exchange also, because of right now the exchange can offer only the local products. We are not allowed to offer these foreign products. That's why what we are doing is what we do is all the regulation that we are operating. We are rushing. We are reviewing all the regulation because of for Thai market. We are very welcome for the foreign investor. We allow the Omnibus account that you can invest in Thailand. For the capital that inflow, we don't have any special requirement. Foreign investor can go into the Thai freely. We don't have all the QDII or in other countries. So we are quite free for the foreign participation. And what we are going to do is we are very open for the cooperation among the foreign exchange to have some opportunity that we can offer some other foreign products into the Thai market.
So Thailand's open for business and mergers. Is that that's your message?
Not that the measure. It's because of the stock markets in Thailand, I think we are one of the last exchange that haven't been demutualized. We still be a kind of a special entity for the stock exchange in Thailand. But for the future market, we are a public company, but not listed.
Okay, interesting. Roland, the whole human reserve. Taiwan, you have a little bit different challenges in terms of currency structures and market access and how your flows are held and managed through the exchanges. And in terms of regulations, is there any impact from the international side versus the domestic side?
I think it's fair to say that the regulators in Taiwan become more and more open regarding to the contract design and international cooperation. They become quite supportive and give us more and more flexibility in introducing new derivative products of foreign index so that